Florida is home to a well-established Syrian-American community, and it also has become a refuge for at least one Syrian who fled his homeland after being detained and tortured. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Bobby O'Brien, sitting in for Carson Cooper this week. Noor Shakveh is a USF student who spent her spring break last year delivering humanitarian aid to refugees along the Syrian-Turkish border. She told her story on Florida Matters last April. For the next chapter of her story, we welcome Noor and her cousin, who has been granted political asylum in the U.S. after having been detained and tortured by the Assad government. One program note, the story told by Mazen Jazan al-Mahmoud can be disturbing. He now lives in northern Florida, but traveled to Tampa over Thanksgiving to be with family. Welcome, Mazen.
Thank you very much.
You fled Syria at the end of 2011, but I'd like to step you back. Can you tell me what your life was like prior to the revolution?
My life, my personal life, I have two jobs, two businesses, and everything was okay. The type of life, it's like, as any country, like the security, so you go to your work, you come back, you can do whatever you want, except talk with policy or anything like that.
What kind of businesses were you running?
Import and export chemical materials for dyes and parts car.
Tell me then, when the revolution came about, how did that affect you personally and professionally?
When the revolution started, everything changed because nobody expect that the revolution will start here in Syria. So some news that there is a problem in Daraa or something like that, we don't believe it. I don't believe it. But when the revolution like went to the other cities, Hama first and Homs second, and like after 1 year in Aleppo, it's like something amazing. The first time when I were in protest, it's, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like something so weird.
Did you fear when you went to that first protest?
Yeah,
I mean, what went through your decision-making? Because it had been going on for more than a year, so obviously you knew there was retribution to be had. There would be people watching.
There is two things I would like to explain in this situation. First of all, I can remember what was like the first time when I was in first protest, because I can remember. But I remember that my tears, it's like, and I was screaming and everything. For the second one, I saw old men, like 7 years old, and he was walking like this.
You're hunching over.
Yeah,
he could barely move,
yeah,
I assume.
I get close to him. I said, I called him like, Dad. Dad, what are you doing here? He said, leave me alone. I said, if you want, I can take you home. He said, no, just leave me alone. He said, I wait like 4 years to be here. Why you ask me this question? I said, I'm sorry, it's okay. So you ask me what I felt like when I was in the first time and on protest. I saw like a car with broken window. I was with my brother, he's a doctor. And he said, Mazen, don't go there because one of the shooters attacked the car. And after that, I saw one guy, he passed me. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm the owner of the car. I said, how can I? He said, I'm okay. But when he passed me, his back is all over blood. So he said, I have children. I have two, my wife and my sister and three children. So I go with him. Like, how can I say it? I follow him. I followed him. And my brother was screaming, don't go there because the shooter will attack me. But I can't think, because if you see like dead people there or someone need help, you can't think. So this is my example about what I felt in the first time in protest and after that. So sometimes you can't think, you just do it. Why? Because the situation it's big than you can think. I don't know if I explained right or
yes, and you got it across that you saw someone in need,
mm-hmm.
you saw something bigger than yourself,
yeah,
and you went to be a part of it and to see if you could help that man who was injured and had to get his sister, his wife, and his three children.
Yeah, yeah. So I carry the child with him. I help him, and it was like a small child, and all over blood anyway.
From that point on, though, that must have changed your life.
Oh my God! It changed me, like it changed my husband forever. Because my parents, and especially in my city, there was massacres like 1982. And my parents sometimes they didn't talk about it too much, but sometimes they told me some stories when they say sometimes they said that when the army go to the enforce the house, they killed the father and the children, and they rape the girls, and they tried to get the gold from the old woman hands. If they couldn't, they just cut their hands, and they keep going. But now I saw more than that.
Now you still have family there.
Yeah.
How did you come to the U.S.? And there were some, I guess, there have been some instances and interactions in between with Assad's regular army.
Yeah. I have a visitor visa by chance because I have business. You know, the to get visa from Syria all around the Middle East, it's not easy. So when I felt my life in danger, I decided to leave because I'm a human. There is difference between feel the death and see the death. If I tell you every like how I felt, you can't feel the same feeling how I did. So it was so horrible.
You have been taken by the forces?
Yes.
Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Yeah.
What was the occasion when they first took you?
They just deliver a paper for me that you have to visit us. It's a different way they usually go and take me, arrest me, and no, it's a different way because they tried to don't be scared the people first. When they delivered the paper for me that you have to go there, I thought it's okay. So if I did something wrong or they know, they will take me immediately. But it was completely different. When I go there, oh my God. Do you know to know what's happened there?
Well, that's what I'm hoping you'll fill
so,
people in.
First of all, I lost the sense of time and feelings. So I went there. I didn't tell anyone because if I told anyone that I'm going there, all my friends who support me, they will stop because they will be afraid. So I went there, and they just put me in a small room for a couple hours. After that, two men came and, put something on my eyes, like, what you call it, a bag or something?
A blindfold or a whole bag over your head.
And they take my hands over, and they took me somewhere. They put me in another room, and they... Someone was investigate me, question me. I don't know for a couple hours, and he said he knows everything. To be honest, he knows everything, and I denied everything. That's who support you, who did that, who do that. Anyway. After that, they took me to another room, and they try. They took all my clothes, first of all, and they put me or hung me in the roof.
They hung you by your wrists were still bound, mm-hmm. and they hung you up with them backwards, pulling your shoulders out.
Yeah, and they tried to rape me. And I don't know how many guys they was, and they tried, they cussing me, they do everything, they said we're gonna bring your family here and we're gonna rape your mom, your sister, and they know, and they mention them by names because they know, and they did something you can't imagine, anything. They one of them, they saw I have scar here, like I did, I had surgery like 3 years, 4 years ago, and they asked me what is that. I said it's scar from the, and it was nerves surgery. So he hit me there. So after a couple, like couple minutes, I was unconscious. And I don't know what happened after that. I don't know what happened after that. I just figure out what's happened because they throw the water on me. I don't know if it's the how many hours. I lost the sense of the time. They took me again. They repeat the same question and everything.
And they were basically trying to find out if you were supporting the rebels, names of anybody.
Mm. Yeah, everything. They use everything. I didn't tell you everything in this room because they used the electric sound. They did everything because if I want to tell you everything now, I can complete. Anyway.
It's hard for you to talk about?
Yeah, I still dreaming on it till now.
This happened more than once.
Yeah. The worst thing was more than this, because this, like, physically suffering or something, when they put me back after the second time, as I remember, they put me in a small room. First of all, there was sound. So when the sound running, I'm okay. It was so small. So you can't like lay down. When the sound disappear, I can breathe. So I find out, like, after that, it was a fan, take the air from the room, and they stop it, like, every 10 minutes. So when they stop it, I can't breathe. So I was screaming and everything, and anyway. After, I don't know, after a couple hours or something, I think it was, like small rooms, and there is space on the middle. I don't know. I tried to draw this in my mind because I can't see. This is the worst things. I heard people suffering. They brought some kids, women, and I can tell from the voice. The kids was shouting, "Please don't do that! Please don't!" And the woman's, "Oh my God." I swear to God, I still hear this sound, like not every day, but I still hear the sounds. It was like worse than the physical treating.
You'd rather have been the one being tortured than hearing them torture women and children?
Especially if you hear these sounds, like kids and women, probably someone with his mom, with his family, and the men was screaming and everything. I was so crazy. And I start like shouting with them. I don't know what's happened after that because they opened the door and one of them attacked me with something. I think it's electrical something, and I was unconscious.
Like a stun gun or?
Yeah, something like that. After that, I don't know when they took me again, and they told me, "We're gonna release you. We will not send you to the court, of course, because they don't have anything against me." And they released me. Why? I don't know. Maybe they will follow me. Of course, they followed me already. My friends and all around me, they told me, "If they catch you again, they will kill you." I told you, it's not easy to understand why. All of this, because this is what the regime put on our head or planted like for 4 years.
How did you, Mazen, get to from being released to not being picked up again to getting out?
Actually, they called me again. Yeah, they called me again.
And you went?
there wasn't no another option, because if I was afraid if I didn't go, they will take one of my family. So I decided to leave. Sometimes after I left, I don't know how to explain it, but I felt that I have to come back to help the people over there.
You're listening to the story of Mazen Jazem Al-Mahmoud, who was granted political asylum and currently lives in Tallahassee. You can view photos of a refugee camp on the Turkish-Syrian border at wusf.org/Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Bobby O'Brien, sitting in for Carson Cooper this week. We're listening to the very personal story of Mazen Jazem Al-Mahmoud. The 30-year-old Syrian fled his country after being detained and tortured several times. And now we're joined by his cousin, Syrian-American Noor Shakfe, a USF student. Noor, this isn't the first time that you've seen your family detained.
Mazen's brother was also detained, right?
Yeah.
He was detained, I think, for 14 years?
It's around 12 years.
In 1982, like, just to give you some background about our family, our family was one of the main families that rose up against the Assad regime in Hama. And so our family was targeted by the government before the massacre and after the massacre. And I remember, like, in March 2011, one of the first reports of the revolution in Syria, someone had called into Al Jazeera to tell them what was going on. And that person was actually my cousin. He was an attorney. And he reported with a pseudonym. And they found him, and he disappeared for like 2 months. And then one day, he was on like Syrian national television. And, like, he looked really raggedy. And on television, he admit to being a terrorist. And, of course, that was a forced admission. It's not true. And he still hasn't been found. And many of my family members from 1982 have still not been found.
When you made the decision to leave, mm-hmm. that had to have been difficult. Did you discuss it with family?
No. They don't know where I'm living. I told them different story, because the community in Syria or in the Middle East is different than here. I raised with my family, and most of the families like live together, even if it's not in the same house in the same area. So I raised to see my mom. My older brother is 50 years old, and he still get permission from my dad to go out.
Okay.
I swear to God. So the family is so close. If I told him that, they know that I got in trouble, but they don't. They didn't know everything, because I can't.
How did you then get out? And did
I
you
don't
have
know.
Any
I don't
assistance?
Know. I tried to find out if they put my name on the airport or everything. I couldn't, because everyone told me different story. Already they took me like 3, 4 times, 5 times. I couldn't believe it till I be in the airplane. So I believe that they will not catch me again. And, yeah, so I don't know why they didn't put me my name there or after that. I don't know. It's different process. I don't know about it. But, yeah, I'm lucky. And I would say in my language, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah?
Alhamdulillah. That means thank God.
Did you fly directly to the U.S.?
No.
Where did you fly to?
Malaysia.
Malaysia.
Malaysia. Oh, Malaysia. Okay.
Because I know I have an American visa, but I couldn't like think that I'm going to go to U.S. because I was so confused. I chose Malaysia because they don't ask visa. And one of my cousins, he already escaped from Syria. His name, anyway, he already escaped
he
from
Syria. He was wanted for organizing protests.
Oh, okay.
So after that, in Malaysia, I involved in the process there because I can't stop.
And how did you end up in the U.S. then?
Because it's like kind of they follow me. It's not follow me. It's like because I was in danger in Malaysia too because I was in process and they was taking the picture there.
Is the U.S., I guess, respecting the visitor's visa or are they going to, give you political protection?
To be honest, yes. In the beginning, no. They didn't allow me to come in. They didn't allow me to come in. I said, why? They said they gave me some reason that they don't have enough money, they don't have blah, 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 blah. Because, to be honest, mm-hmm. I gave him wrong information. Why? Because, of course, I visit many countries, but the first time in my life in the United States. And some of my friends advised me, if they ask you about Syria, try to avoid to speak about Syria. If they ask you about any problem, if you involved with any problem, try to avoid. And they asked me, if you have a problem to come back to Syria. I said, no, I'm okay. So after that, they said no.
He called my brother, who is an attorney. And then my brother said that he qualifies for political asylum. And so they pursued that avenue, and he's been granted political asylum. And he was granted political asylum very, very quickly.
To qualify is to, you just have to show what?
Well, I think his story was really compelling because he had been tortured 5 different times and he didn't actually commit a real crime.
You left your business behind? You
after 1 year, there's no business. Everything gone. Everything. It's not only me.
Everyone.
Everyone. Yeah. Everyone.
So how are you handling living in the U.S.? You've been here how long now?
It's around like 16 months, something mm-hmm. like that, yeah.
How are you handling it?
So it's different than what I expect because in my country, to be honest, in my country and most of the Middle East, they tried the different face for the other countries. Like they said that United States control everything, they cause blah, 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 and they show it like a devil or something. But it's different. I know I'm an educated person. I know it's not true, but it's different when we talk about the people and we talk about the government. So when I came here, it's was completely different. Everyone know my story. They will so passionate, and it doesn't matter who religion was. But I think that why they in our media they said that, and I'm not saying all the media around here they did the same, but some of them they do the same, because they showing the Middle East it's full of terrorists, full of everything. Even in my country now, it's not so. Everything you see it in the TV, it's not. It's only 10% of the truth. The truth is more than this.
Do you get a chance at all to talk with family or get messages to them? And do you worry about their safety now that
of
you
course,
are
I'm
here?
Of course, I'm still worried about them, but I can't talk with them whenever I want because there is no connection sometimes. There is no internet. There is no connection at all. I can't explain how much I miss my parents, especially my mom.
I bought a telescope. And I was telling him the telescope magnification is 480 times. And he was like, can I see my mom through it? And I was like, no, sorry.
That is hard. To take that step.
Of course. It's so hard. And I don't know if I did the right decision or not. I'm still confused because I'm afraid to stay here for how long I will stay here, and after I come back, I can't find none of them. This is what I'm scared. I dream about them every day. You can't believe, every day. So, especially my mom.
You've been generous, sharing very personal details of your life.
Thank you.
Why make that decision to step forward and make it public?
What do you mean?
Why are you willing to tell the public, everyone who hears this, your story?
For two reasons. The first one, I didn't mention it till now, but they offered me to show in CNN or something like that. But I said no because I'm still afraid about my family. But now, like after like I have been here for 1 year, after that, I think they will not concern about when he talk about Syria, because the real situation it's more than that. It's 100 more than that. The second thing, it's very important to know that not everything you see in the TV it's 100% true, because I'm sorry to say that, but some media, it's not only here in the United States, and all around the world, they try to show something and to hide something else. But the real situation is, that's what I would like to mention it in my interview, that the real situation, it's different than what you think, because we don't have terrorist people. I'm not saying that our nation is 100% perfect, no, but the people in my country, they have white heart. They have been living in simple life. Our morals, they didn't allow us not to kill someone, to touch someone. And my religion ordered me, if I smile in your face, I will get reward for that. And my morals ordered me, and my religion too, not only the Islam or the religion like this, to give you help, even I don't know you. Why? Because the God will reward me. And when I need help, the God will send someone to help me.
Well, thank you. I know that we're not at the end, and it's a complex issue. It's a complex issue that is worldwide,
yeah. But
it comes down to individual stories. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for today's show. Our deepest appreciation to Mazen Jazem al-Mahmoud for his willingness to share his story, and to USF student Noor Shakfeh, a Syrian-American and active humanitarian. You can join the conversation on Facebook or get more information online at wusf.org/Florida Matters. Florida Matters is produced with the help of Dustin Hapley and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Bobby O'Brien. Thanks for listening.